They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew.
Joining me on the Commons today, I have Bill Davis. Now, I know a lot of you sit here and you wait for Bill to come on because you love him. And I've heard from a number of you saying you've got to clone this guy. I haven't quite managed to clone you yet, Bill. But but we will if we can.
Well, thanks for the wonderful intro, Sue.
So I know it's been a while since we've talked. You've been super, super busy. And we've both been hearing from a lot of homeowners out there. Bill, people go and buy a house, and I keep saying it's an emotional purchase. They go in, they fall in love with the view, they fall in love with the smell of the brownies baking in the oven, they fall in love with the couch that's not going to be there when they move in. They move in, they bring in their stuff, they paint the room, they hang their pictures, they put up a bowl of flowers, and they sit down, and they are so happy. They are in their home at last. But that doesn't last long, does it, Bill?
No, it doesn't in many of these places.
Somehow things start to unravel, and sometimes pretty quickly.
Yes.
So what happens? Why does it unravel? What happens?
Well, I think one of the problems is you've got a trade group out there that makes money off of creating chaos in these neighborhoods. And so they profit from every accusation of violation that they can send out. And they flood the neighborhood with these things. And everybody thinks it's just them and wants to call and complain to the very people who are more than happy to charge more money to listen to complaints and to hear about some violation that somebody else has, which is the automatic reaction of most homeowners. Oh, but what about so-and-so's, you know, their fence is 6 inches too tall or whatever it is. Or they have blue flowers, and we're not permitted to have blue flowers on the front porch.
Yeah. Yeah. It's why is it so it gets down to the most ridiculous.
It is.
It gets down to the most ridiculous. Are we that stupid that we're going to spend that much time worrying about the color of your flowers, the height of your grass?
That's what's funny is we're not the ones that had the choice. We didn't have the choice. You know, the industry will say, well, you didn't have to buy there. You chose, you agreed to it when you bought in there. But it's like, no, all these places have sets of restrictions, and this industry as a whole has moved to ever more restrictive, you know, restrictions. We had, you know, 30 years ago, you might have seen them with a page, two pages. Nowadays, they're often 100 or more pages in length.
Oh, yeah.
Complete with guidelines for how you're supposed to do things, a community manual, which is the most ridiculous thing I've seen. And I see this routinely now, these guys turning out landscaping manuals and community manuals about how you're supposed to behave. Like, these are people. They don't, this is, you're trying to turn this into use a land use restrictions to control every aspect of a person's life and their family life. It's just ridiculous.
It is, but when I say we, I mean collectively we as people. Why are we accepting this? Why are we not shredding these documents and saying, you know, I'm going to buy the house because there's nothing else out there. It's what I can afford. It's near, it's in the neighborhood I need. It's within, it's in the school district I want to be in. It's close, it's easy access to the airport because I do a lot of traveling. And there's not another one there. But I refuse to accept all of this nonsense. But if we collectively did that, instead of just having one person go, oh, we can't do that. It's going to take one person. I have seen so many times where it's just been one person when the entire neighborhood is going one way. One person who's managed to derail that. I have seen that time and again. I remember going to a meeting with homeowners, and I've said, look, everybody is here. You'll never, ever, it's a brand new association. They refused to take it over from the developer because they wanted to make sure that VDOT was going to take care of the road. I said, you can vote to get rid of the association now. You'll never have everybody at a meeting again like this. Vote now and do. The developer had a representative there. Her jaw hit the ground like, oh, my God, what are you talking about? There was one person who said, yeah, but what if somebody painted their front door red? I'm going, so are you afraid of red doors? Oh, no, not me. But, you know, that was the one that derailed it.
Well, the way they're, especially the new ones are set up, and I'm sure this is true in many, if not all, states, is you have no voting. You don't have voting rights to start off with. But the way it's set up is a developer goes in and imposes the restrictions, which are, of course, there's no homeowner sitting at the table. So they're all written to benefit the developer. And people don't seem to understand that. Oh, yeah, this altruistic developer did this all for you to preserve your property value. No, they did it to maximize what they can get out of the property. The heck with you. You know, they don't seem to understand that. And then the way that the developer then puts the HOA, which the developer is going to control, in charge of everything. Well, guess what? So now your dispute is with the HOA as opposed to the developer, and this so-called nonprofit HOA. I don't know why people think that nonprofit is somehow makes it a candy striper organization or something like that. It doesn't. That's the clue that you've got an organization that's being used to highly compensate an executive director or to route services to another place. All nonprofit means is that its members or contributors don't get anything directly back, like in the form of a dividend or something like that. That does not mean that the organization isn't used to extract money from people and direct them to other places. I mean, it's just – but that's what the HOA does. And so they have the HOA assume all these liabilities that the developer might have otherwise had or the local government, and then through restrictive covenants, they make the homeowners contractually liable for the HOA's obligations, but never the developer. And they're almost always specifically excluded from having to pay assessments or having any liability whatsoever. So the idea that this is beneficial to homeowners is absurd. But the problem is the homeowners do not, first of all, they get no vote whatsoever during the period of developer control typically. So they don't get to vote at all. That developer period of control can last for decades. I mean, there's a number of them here in Austin. You know, the city's touting it as, oh, this wonderful, you know, utopian, smart plan. Well, whatchamacallit, the initial plan was for the debt client or the developer to control it for 60 years, but it can unilaterally amend the documents, which means it can extend them if it wants to. So you're living in this basically monarchy for a minimum of 60 years. And do you really think that all the contracts that the entity that has no obligation to you is entering into are intended to be beneficial to you, or do you think they're intended to be beneficial to the developer and whoever controls the HOA? I mean, it's like nonsensical. Why people would believe, oh yeah, it's here for me. Oh, it's ours. Oh, it's taking care of us.
Yeah, no,
nothing could be further from the truth. Yeah. So people don't really have a choice, sort of a riot, in trying to undo some of these things, at least during the period of developer control, because they have no ability to vote. Doesn't matter how many people are against it. It just doesn't matter. The only vote that really counts is the developers. After the period of developer control, the homeowner's vote is typically mathematically irrelevant for a while because the developers usually give themselves either more than one class of voting rights, and it'll require a vote from both class, or they'll have a vote multiplier where they made sure that, you know, for every vote you get typically one per lot maybe, they're going to get maybe 100 per lot, 6 per lot, 20 per lot, 200, whatever it takes to maintain control for a period of time. So it's a long while before the period of developer control ends, and it could be a very long time. So by the time homeowners get to vote, you know, some of the earlier houses are already starting to show some pretty good signs of wear and tear. And don't tell me that wouldn't happen if there wasn't an HOA. Everything ages.
Yeah.
And the people that set these HOAs up aren't exactly building the, you know, most durable houses in the world.
Oh, no. They're disposable.
So they're part of they're creating this thing. And then that just becomes a money machine for the management companies and everybody else to start accusing people of.
Going back to this particular situation, it was not an HOA in the sense that you have all of these amenities and all of this wonderful stuff. It was an infill lot. It was a one-street cul-de-sac with, I don't know, maybe 12 or 14 houses in total. All the houses had been built. All the houses had sold. All the owners had moved in. The reason they had an HOA was because the county required a drainage pond, and somebody had to maintain that drainage pond. That was it.
Yeah.
And the developer wanted to get this monkey off his back and dump it in the owner's laps. Now, this one street was going to be part of VDOT. VDOT had not signed on accepting the street, maintenance of the street. They didn't want to get stuck with a defective street. So they would not sign on and take over the association. Usually you're trying to kick the developer out. This developer wanted out. And these homeowners wouldn't let him go because VDOT hadn't accepted maintenance of the road.
Yeah.
And so they all got together to talk about it. They called me, would I go down? And I looked at them and I said, you'll never have everybody at a meeting again. Now, in most governing documents, there's always a way out. Why don't you have nothing here. Donate the pond or whatever you want to call it to the county. They want it, so give it to them. If they want to tack on $2 a year for your taxes to maintain the pond, that's fine. Get VDOT to take over, but dissolve the HOA. You don't need it. And everybody's going, yeah, that's a great idea, except this one woman who was terrified of a red door. But what if somebody paints their front door red? I said, then somebody paints their front door red. What's the big deal? Are you afraid of red doors?
That's kind of a cool thing in some of the neighborhoods I, you know, go through regularly. It's like, oh, that's kind of unique and really looks great in the fall. And
I jump up and down when I see purple and yellow houses. I think, yay,
yeah.
There's a little color and character over here. Look at that.
Right.
But no, but the homeowners have got to understand what they're doing. That one was one case, and then I read minutes from, and I'm not sure where it was, but everybody in the HOA signed something to say they wanted to dissolve the HOA. They went to the local municipal government hearing, presented it to them, and they said, everybody wants to dissolve this HOA. We don't want it. One person stood up and said, well, I don't want to dissolve the HOA. And, of course, the staff said, oh, no, HOAs are good. We don't want you to dissolve the HOA. So the municipality voted against it. One person.
Why does the municipality have a vote in what was supposedly a private contractual agreement between parties. At least that's what it's represented. It's all the time is how, you know, local government can't get involved. It's a civil matter, blah, 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 because it's a private agreement between parties. So why is any of this being presented before municipal government of any kind as to whether or not the HOA would be terminated?
Well, I'm going to guess that the reason is, and I don't know. I mean, it was just minutes from a meeting that I read. And I'm going to guess that it's because municipalities mandate them because they collect taxes. And presumably, they're going to have to get off their behinds and actually provide some of the services, like street maintenance, street lighting, trash removal, if it's somewhere where it snows, snow removal. But the services that your tax dollars were designed to pay for.
Yeah.
So it's always one person. Oh, no, I want to bind everybody to this nonsense, and we're just going to keep it there. So anyway, that's two that I'm aware of. And if I'm aware of that many of them, you know it's not the first time it's happened or the only time. So, yeah.
It's some of the other things that are kind of crazy. Well, here, you can't simply gift something to particularly a county. It would have to vote on it. And, of course, if it's a liability, I mean, this is why this rule exists, or actually it's really a law. In fact, I think it's in our Constitution, is to avoid accepting things that are nothing but liabilities. But that leaves an awkward situation if it's truly and if the industry seizes upon this, oh, well, the county, I can show you papers where they've written, oh, we have to have these HOAs. Otherwise, it would create this enormous burden for local government to have to take on these things. You mean the things that people are paying taxes for to begin with? And why are these citizens third-class citizens where their stuff doesn't get taken care of and this other stuff does? But, I mean, that's the argument as to why you can't terminate these things is because they have things that they're taking care of. But what you're talking about, a drainage area, to me, that seems like something a city or county should be responsible for because, number one, if it overflows, it affects everybody, and these people are paying taxes just like everybody else.
It was required by the municipality. And the reason they're doing that is because they've increased density so much, there's no place for the rain to go. You know, it's just... Bill, they're making such a mess of things. It's unbelievable.
I believe it.
They literally are making a mess of things. And people, you know, I wish to God people would just stop and think. They just accept anything at face value, and they can't do that. They just can't do that.
Yeah.
Find out what your municipal government is spending your tax dollars on. It's certainly not, protecting whatever it is or providing you the services they were designed to provide you with. What are they spending the money on? In our case over here in Fairfax, they gave themselves a 20% raise when their constituents were out of work, had not had a raise. You know, it's abuse. It's an abuse of power. Find out what they're doing. Find out why. What are they doing with your money? Is it necessary?
Yeah, that's a whole nother. That's a whole nother battle. But there's got to be a way of not giving it to them so easily, or imposing an obligation to where, you know, you don't get to treat these people different because they, you know, it's a newer development than an older one. It's sort of the kind of like the "we were here first" crowd, except after a certain point of time, probably 20, 30 years ago, everybody gets subjected to this, which is you're going to live in a place that's going to have an HOA, and you're going to have to pay these assessments and be threatened with all these things. And it's nuts. It has nothing to do with property value, certainly from a county's standpoint or a local government standpoint. And the people need to see through those arguments. But all I've seen for many years is people that just, it's a religion to them. They actually believe that they've been told this thing, so they believe it, and they can't come up with any empirical evidence that it, I mean, this is purely a secular issue, right? Property values.
Yeah.
So but they simply believe it's going to. It's like, how can it possibly? Let's just look at, there's no empirical evidence to support it, and just look at all the claws this thing has into you with many jurisdictions, you know, fining and foreclosure and all this other kind of stuff. How is that preserving, you know, property values for anyone? Heck, a foreclosure itself, they have to take that into account on property sales when they do, you know, property valuations. It's like, well, it's a public sale. It sold at this dollar amount. So now you have a, you know, $500,000 place going for $4,000 or something like that, HOA allegations. Okay, well, that puts a hit in your property valuations for the entire neighborhood. In fact, the areas outside that neighborhood, as long as it's in close proximity. So how is that, you know, helpful to property values? It's all nonsense.
It is nonsense, but how can we get people to understand this, open their eyes? I get so frustrated because I hear from people, oh no, it protects my property values, you see. It's going to stop someone from painting their front door red, you see, and that's going to protect me. Baloney, guys, wake up. Wake up. You've been lied to. Stop being gullible.
Well, we've talked about some of this before, but I mean, don't let the industry control the terminology for all this thing.
Yeah.
And challenge people when they say it preserves property values. You know, where do you say? I had somebody come back to me and say, well, prove that it doesn't. I'm like, you're the one that's asserted the proposition that it preserves property values, but you're telling me I need to pay. I said, you know, normally when you purchase something or you borrow money, there's a term over which you pay the loan off and any liens release, it's only security interest. But I said, you know, the HOA is not providing anything in this case. These assessments are used primarily to do what? Purchase insurance for a board, which you wouldn't need if you didn't have an HOA, and to build a war chest for litigating against the homeowners. And so it really doesn't add anything at all. It can't possibly proceed to something that creates value for anybody, except the insurance company and the management company and all these predators that are preying upon the people that live in this subdivision. But there's no evidence of preserving or enhancing value for any of the homeowners. And on the terminology point, I come back to these people think there's a confusion about what the association is. They think it's the homeowners, and it's not. It's a completely separate entity that usually exists before any homeowner ever purchased a single piece of property in there. And they don't understand that. It's a separate entity. It is not the homeowners. It has no duty to the homeowners in most states, no obligations to the homeowners. It's everything's written so that the homeowners have an obligation to pay to it, and their property is security for whatever debt the HOA racks up. And they don't understand that. I think there's got to be a better way of communicating this information out to them. I mean, maybe more people would start getting apartments or some other form of housing instead of buying houses in these places.
Well, I think sometimes, Bill, they even set up the HOA before they turn the first pitcher full.
Sure.
Shovel full of dirt before they, you know, start building. The HOA is there.
Yeah.
In fact, the HOA is there on land that's not even ready to be developed yet. But before I forget, I want to take you back to something that happened a number of years ago. And I don't remember exactly who it was, so I'm not going to. I think I remember, but I'm not sure. But somebody wrote something, a member of the industry, wanting to, because these poor HOAs were so underfunded, they didn't have the money. But what they wanted was when the HOA, when the homeowner sold their home and moved, that part of the appreciation they got from the house that they bought was to be turned over to the HOA, because it was the HOA that is responsible for that appreciation.
Yeah.
Can you even fathom that kind of thinking?
Well, they've gone worse than that, because now they all want a transfer fee regardless of whether the home appreciated in value or not. And that's completely unjustified.
Well, the transfer fee goes to the management company, because the management company who's paid on a contractual basis to keep the paperwork, the books and records of the association, is transferring your name from their records to the buyer's name. So that they don't send it to Bill Davis, they send it to Shoe Bartholomew instead.
That's something that they need to pay for as part of their regular, you know, contractual stuff. But I'm actually I know that that's one type of transfer fee, and the management companies have referred to that as an administrative transfer fee, and they've tried to preserve that. And the FHFA, the Federal Housing Finance Administration, has told them, no, that's not, we're not going to buy a loan secured by property that have restrictions like that. And in fact, you know, one of the biggest management companies, at least in the nation, attempted to lobby to have that rule changed, but they lost on that. The problem is the FHFA is not enforcing that rule. But I'm not talking so much about the administrative ones. There are a number of these places around where they demand a percentage of the sales price of the home to go to a foundation. There's a number of them in the Houston area. There's some in the Dallas area in Texas. I'm sure there's a number of these all over the country, but it goes into a foundation, which, of course, you don't know anything about because it's a private organization and it's not subject to any kind of open meetings or open records. It's not a governmental agency, and you're not a member of it. You're just an involuntary funder of it. And even worse, you're not going to benefit because it comes from when you sell your house. You take away part of the proceeds of your house and dump it into this foundation. And you don't even have control over who sits on this foundation board. It may not even know who it is. But there's a number of them that are doing this. Castle Hills in the Dallas area, Sienna Plantation in Houston. There's another several of them.
Is there legal authority to do that?
Well, I know that there was the one in Houston, there was a lawsuit back when they started doing this early, I think late 90s, early 2000s, and it settled by making it applicable only to the new people that bought the houses. So when the homeowners resold. So basically the next set of people get stuck with it. The legislature,
You need to move, Bill.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, it's a little fuzzy. Okay.
Let's close down everything electronic around me. Okay, so so there was legislation in 2007, I think it was, that provided that it started off being filed as transfer fees being prohibited. The example used was there was basically a crook. I don't know how else better to describe it. He asked people to sign up for this program where they would get basically money every time their house was resold. And so he came out with a scheme that has basically been prohibited since, like, the days of feudalism. But he came up with a scheme to where they paid him for a service, and they would get a fee every time the house was sold as essentially a transfer fee. And so the American Land Title Association said, hey, this is a problem. It's holding up titles. It's like, how about the more fundamental about asking people to, you know, have to give a chunk or it goes to someone every time? They've already sold the property. Why should they get something every time it's resold? Well, CAI jumped in on this, and they reached an agreement with American Land Title Association, and so they both started supporting legislation that prohibited transfer fees that was payable to a developer or to a former owner of the property or anything like that. However, it specifically accepted fees paid to the HOA or to its management company. So, of course, CII is going to want something like that because it essentially became an enabling act to impose a transfer fee as long as you got paid to the HOA or the management company. Because it started off by prohibiting them. And it says this doesn't apply to such and such or redefines them so they're not transfer fees. At least that's what it was in this state. I saw something similar in Illinois and New York and things like this going on all over the country because both groups, people don't understand this. It's not a local problem. It's a national problem. These groups lobby all over the country. But what was amazing, and I can send you examples of this, these realtor groups get on board and they start marketing this as a wonderful thing, transfer fees eliminated. No, they weren't. It actually became an enabling act. Well, in the Illinois one, you look at it, and specifically it does it just like everywhere else. basically created an ability for an HOA to impose a transfer fee or a management company to impose a transfer fee. So, you know, they've tried to create by statute something that didn't inherently exist otherwise at law. And it started off as an attempt to kill off what was clearly a, you know, problematic practice of people claiming they had an ongoing interest in the property forever.
So property values, wow, Bill, I've learned something today. They claim that they're protecting your property values, but the whole time they're just depleting them,
yeah.
Blatantly depleting any values that you may have added to the property over the years.
Yeah. Well, and how does an ever-increasing load of restrictions improve, increase, enhance property values?
It doesn't.
For the owners? It doesn't. It's just the most ridiculous position to take. And, you know, I like the approach Florida had with its marketable title, Marketable Record Title Act, and I would like to see that in more places. Of course, the industry's tried to water that down and create abilities to reinstate restrictions where they were dead, and, revive them after they've, you know, died and everything else. But they basically had a 30-year time period these things could last. And after that, if you didn't act before the 30 years was up, it's dead. They created a panic in the industry. They lobbied for changes so that they could be reinstated even after the fact. Well, that's not very fair to people who bought. You know, if your argument is going to be, well, you knew when you moved in. Well, you knew these were going to expire at some point when you moved in, too. And it's clearly intellectual dishonesty to claim, well, it's okay to reinstate it when it wasn't claimed, but it wasn't okay to allow it to. It's not okay to enforce ridiculous restrictions against people on the theory that they knew it when they moved in, and then simultaneously say, hey, we can reinstate these now that they've expired, because it was supposed to expire on the similar provision because of the Marketable Record Title Act. But I do think it'd be nice to see these things have a hard expiration date. It's like, hey, you can't have this thing more than X number of years, and the land's free again after that.
You know, Bill, I just want to see all of this nonsense taken away. I want to go back to the way it is when you go and buy a car, when you go and buy a suit. If you go and buy a pair of jeans and you wear it around, nobody is going to tell you. Well, maybe they will tell you can't have your butt hanging out of it. But, you know, basically it's up to you. You wear it on Monday, Friday, whenever you want to wear it. Well, I was following a kid the other day, and the jeans were down below his. Anyway, it wasn't a pretty picture.
Right.
But the thing is, you buy something, you own it, you do with it what you want. You don't, as long as you don't use it to harm someone else, and your house should be no different. That's the biggest asset, the biggest item you buy.
Well, how about something even as simple as changing the burden and showing that the presumption is that these restrictions are void unless they serve a specific purpose, for example. And then if the argument is going to be they enhance property values, it's like prove that a breach of them harms property values. And you know what? They won't be able to do it in most cases because it doesn't.
I told you about my friend Terry. He was one of the founding members of a group that an organization we started years ago, back in the late 80s, early 90s, to basically preserve homeownership. Lived in a condo, still does. He's still there, and he sent them a letter. He said, "You know, I have investments. I have stocks, I have bonds, I go through, you know, whatever. And every so many months, I get a letter telling me how my investment's doing under their care."
Right.
And he said, "You keep saying that you're protecting property values. I would like to know what you have done to protect the value of my property. I would like to know how my value is doing compared to similar condos in the region. And this was in Reston, which is just all the entire Reston is. But he was told that when his letter arrived to the board and they read it, they just didn't know what to do. They called the attorney in.
Immediate response of board members.
Yes.
Somebody else is dialed to spin it.
What do we do? Oh, my God. Somebody wants to know. We said we're protecting property value. Somebody wants to know what we've done to protect value. And how does his value compare? So the attorney very wisely said, well, let us think about it. Send him a letter telling him that you've received his letter and you will get back to him soon. I think he's still waiting. And this is like 30 years later.
The emperor wears no clothes.
Yeah. Ah, the emperor's new clothes. Yep. Oh, my God, what are we going to do? Somebody called our bluff. So, you know, send next time your HOA. Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot a key piece of thing. The opening, and if you notice, and nothing written since, none of the declarations start off this way. But in his case, his declaration and in that period, all of them, started off by saying the purpose of this association is to protect property values. So the purpose is to protect property values. They no longer put that on declarations because somebody said, prove it. What have you done to protect my property values?
Well, and the other thing that people don't, I still see this in the ones I see. It says it's there to enhance the value of the property, and it uses the capital P, meaning the whole property. Well, the whole property isn't being sold, and it's owned by individual people, and it's not clear how this is preserved. I mean, that's not an interest of anybody to preserve the value of the whole property. It's not taxed that way. It's not sold that way. It's not exchanged in that way. It's not maintained in that way. It just doesn't even make any sense. But when it gets down into other details and talks about preserving property values, it doesn't, the missing thing is there's a, I may have my grammar wrong here, but sentence structure, but it's missing for whom? Who is it preserving value for? The local government? Well, I don't care about the local government. I bought this for me, and my goal in life isn't to pay more taxes. So it doesn't say it's for the homeowner. And people had to realize, well, of course, it's for the benefit of the person who authored them, which is the declarant. That's it. And well, not just the declarant, but who did the declarant hire to write them? HOA attorneys.
Well, it's the attorneys. And I know a lot of them, that's all they do is they just sit there and they write these declarations. In the old days, before you had computers and you could just generate a fresh copy, print a fresh copy up, you go to the land records and you find all of the associations that were started during a certain period. And you pull their declarations out, and they'd been copied. You put it in a copying machine. You just cross out the name, and you copy it. And with every generation, with every new copy, the quality goes down. I mean, it's really hard to read some of those. When I was in real estate, I had to look at some of that stuff and read it. It was impossible to read. It was.
The subdivision, best way I can put from it is escaped. I do think we escaped the place last year. It moved out. I had an HOA. We were in battle with it for many years. And we did prevail, but it was very costly. And the HOA had sued a bunch of homeowners and basically chased off about 25% of the subdivision. But the sad part is, even though we prevailed, it's like these people never learned the lesson. Yeah. And the same problems are recurring. Like, it's predictable. Yeah. It's going to happen again in 4 years.
Yeah.
Same exact thing. The industry people know this. They know. I mean, there's a playbook they operate by. They can see what's going to happen. Sit back. We're going to wait till this happens again and we'll seize upon it. But they're back at having the exact same problems. Our lawsuit was over. We have a right to have our own well. Get away from us. Well, developer had owned a private water company that they wanted everybody to use. It's like, well, there's no mandate to use that. The restrictions, but the developer controlled the HOA, and you know, have this prior approval provision to give approval to these things. Well, you know what? The well's underground, so it's not an aesthetic issue. And there's not a prohibition against using them. So, but they tried to prohibit them, and that's what led to this fight. Well, the reason we wanted a well is because when we moved in, it wasn't that we were precluded from having them. We were told we didn't have to. Well, that'll save you $20,000, maybe more, at least at that time, when you're constructing a house, and that's significant. Well, that's great. But when the water company isn't functional or can't serve the water of the neighborhood, you need a source of water, and you don't need your house or your ability to live there or sell the property to be tied to an investor-owned utility that has no particular, you know, obligation to you. So we got the right to have our own well, and we went to court for it and everything else. Well, the very people that opposed this, the other homeowners that were just – why would they oppose that, right? Because if we're not in their system, that's more water for them, mm-hmm. right? It didn't make any sense, but they opposed this. And the funny thing is they've been put in that situation now several more times since then, where the water company can't keep up. They've been out of water. They've had boil water notices.
Oh, really?
People trying to get out of the neighborhood. Well, you know, it's not a real incentive to want to buy there when you got boil water notices hanging on all the signs. And like the original developer, when this happened, they went to, well, let's not post the signs in the neighborhood anymore because that might harm property values. Let's go hang door tags on or make phone calls to people and tell them not to do it. Well, that's what's so, you know, that's not about preserving value. That's about concealing a, you know, defectively designed subdivision and setup so that the, you know, buyer doesn't know what's going on. The seller sure know. And but it's like, why were these people? What is the mentality with these people to simply oppose something like this, or to be so active in opposition that they themselves were harmful? It's like some human nature problem. I'm not a psychologist, psychiatrist, but it's the same people like getting on boards and saying no, we're not going to allow this. It's like, well, I don't need your permission. I'm doing it without your permission. I don't need your permission. I don't care what you think. You know. And it needs to go back to more of that, because these boards are not, there's no reason for them to have this kind of authority over people. Even the declarant was only doing it to ensure that he could maximize his value out of the, out of what he was selling. But it's, once that's been done, it's time for the individual homeowners to have, you know, to have that ability. The land was conveyed to them. We had the same problem with gas. Propane gas.
Yeah. I remember you telling me about that too.
Yeah, they try to monopolize it. Try to make sure that you can only hook up to the central gas system. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, there's actually no restriction that requires that. None. In fact, we were told this was only temporary until they got natural gas out to the area. Then you find out later, well, as long as the developer's getting a kickback on it, it's like 9% of sales of gas passing through the line. So that's a pretty big kickback.
Wow.
And, imagine that for a city-sized neighborhood. That's a chunk of money. What incentive do they have to approve anything that would diminish their, you know, not so, in my view, lawfully earned money? But they'll threaten you with foreclosure and everything else in order to collect that. That's not beneficial to the homeowners. It's only beneficial to the developer.
So we come back full circle, Bill, right? The homeowners need to stop being so damn gullible.
Yep.
And need to start thinking things through. Just because someone said doesn't make it so. People lie. Sometimes they do it intentionally. Sometimes they don't even know they're doing it because they were lied to. And they pass it on. And you just keep believing it and accepting it and passing it on. And pretty soon, this lie takes on a life of its own, and everybody thinks that this is the way it is, that just because somebody said it's got to be true.
Reminds me of that old slogan, question authority. These guys are so adamant about trying to show authority and impose authority and threats and things like this to maintain this authoritarian type a role, and it's like, well, start challenging it, question it, based upon what?
Yeah.
You know?
Think. Don't just, I'm hearing people repeat stuff that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. You know, some of it in the HOA, but it seems to be endemic. It's all over the place. It doesn't matter what it is. They just repeat it. They heard it someplace, so they're going to repeat it. It's got to be true.
One of the just ridiculous arguments, the HOA attorney, I'm sure he does this other places too, tried making in court. And I know this is about the more general thing than it, rather than our case, but it's hard. But we're hitting on some areas that I'm recalling. You know, they were trying to use this harms property values argument. So they sort of twisted it and said, well, if they're allowed to have wells on their property, that increases their property value at everyone else's expense. It's like, well, wait a minute. If you build a house to property, does that increase your property value at everyone else's expense? I mean, it was just the most ridiculous. But
What does that mean?
They knew this property value thing is just embedded in everybody's head, and they were trying to seize upon it the best way that they could. They made the same argument about propane tanks. Oh, you're going to improve that. It's like, well, wait a minute. Putting a driveway on my property, you know, I don't know if it improves it, but it certainly makes life a lot nicer for me. That's why I'm doing it. It doesn't have anything to do with anybody else's property, and they're all probably going to put one on their property too when they want to, you know, not drive through mud to get to their house. I mean, it's just insane what they were trying to do with the property value argument.
Putting in indoor plumbing improves the property value. So what are you going to do about it, buddy?
Yeah, how does having a lawsuit in the whole neighborhood or threatening people with foreclosure? How many houses have sold in the neighborhood since this has been going on?
Bill, why are we so damn dumb?
I don't know.
Are we really?
You know, there are some homeowners that certainly don't help. You had one that you know, just made the comment about, well, I don't like, what if somebody has a red door?
Yeah.
And I've got some people, especially when you look at what's going on around the country, I've got them everything that they've asked, and they seem to be holding up on settling a case that's otherwise going to cost them an arm and a leg personally, which hasn't so far, but it will, that they don't settle, is because they don't want to have a time-limited pre-suit mediation, meaning that before this person files suit again, they have to seek mediation at least within the next, say, 15 months or so. It's like, why is that a problem? You hadn't sued in 20 years, and if you do sue, the court is going to mandate that you go to mediation before you go to trial. So you're going to have to eventually, but, you know, we are trying to settle this thing. And there's no requirement that you spend a half a day in mediation or spend a certain amount of money or even go to a particular mediator, and this is part of a settlement. So why is that such a huge problem? I don't want to be regulated. Well, really? I mean, you
don't
know,
live in an HOA.
I know. Like, well, this is a very expensive proposition, and you lived in a gated community because you believed it offered you some kind of security, which, of course, it does not. And the other complaint was, well, they won't let me have an estate sale. Okay, well, they control the gate. And it's not that I think it's, you know, okay or legal or anything like that, but the lawsuit that we have has nothing to do with garage sales, estate sales, or anything else. It's about whether some bylaw amendments that the board adopted were valid. And we took the position that they're void, and the other side has agreed to not oppose a judgment that they're void. So that's what the lawsuit was about, and they've agreed to that. And assuming that we have a, you know, signed agreement, and the homeowner's like, nope, because they won't give me an estate sale. It's like, if we go to trial, you're not going to get an estate sale. I mean, unfortunately, there are, there's just no, this is nonsensical.
Yeah.
It's completely irrational. It makes it very difficult as a practitioner. Is like, why am I representing this person? I mean, I think I got them everything that they were looking for and things that we probably couldn't have gotten in court to begin with. And how can I continue representing this person? Because what they want is really a fight. It's like, well, we've got everything you want. There's no need to have a fight anymore. So,
The best thing is to, I don't know, just take it and go. I wish that there was some way we could build something that's not part of an HOA, where you get all these idiots out of there because you don't want somebody coming, oh, well, you got to have an HOA because somebody might paint the front door red. I mean, come on, give me a break. You know?
Well, here's the crazy thing. Here's the other crazy thing, Sue. In this neighborhood, this person feared. The reality is the choice is not given to them at any rate, right? It's given to some architectural committee,
yeah,
which can decide, hey, red's fine. Okay, so why? So this homeowner who is concerned about that is not going to have a choice in the matter one way or the other anyway, so why is it relevant to them? I mean, the architecture committee could say, right, red's fine, no problem. So now what's this homeowner fearful of? Oh, okay, because someone else approved it? That doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. And a red door does not devalue property. I mean, how asinine is that? But it's just that people have been told this stuff and they don't think. They don't think. So my comeback was, are you afraid of a red door? Do red doors scare you? Oh, no, not me. Well, then we don't have a problem, do we? Go ahead. Dissolve the HOA. No. Everybody else in the neighborhood wants to do that. I mean, it was a unique opportunity, Bill. It was a unique opportunity.
Well, that opportunity would be pretty rare here. I did find we were looking at purchasing property last year, and there was one neighborhood. It's a small one. It's probably 30 houses. And right about the time we were looking, we received information that they had filed paperwork to terminate the HOA. They had one. I'm like, why do they have one for 30 houses? And they decided it was just administrative. Fortunately, they didn't have industry people in there pushing on them and everything else. They were self-managed. But they were like, this is just too big of a hassle. And of course, the industry would like to say, yeah, that's why you need to hire us. And then you have to have one forever in order to keep paying us and keep us employed. But they get rid of the HOA. It was all county streets. There was just no reason to have one unless you wanted to go around, you know, using a corporate entity to go beat up on people. And there just wasn't any reason to have one. So it
went
away. But
they
signed paperwork to actually get rid of it, to terminate it. Most of the times I'm finding that there's many of them that were improperly imposed. I found a few phony HOAs, and a number of them where it just, you know, over time it just went into, you know, people just kind of forgot about it, let it fall into its corporate charter, get revoked, things like that. But there's no one should have to wait until that happens.
Well, the thing is, even if they can't dissolve it, and sometimes that's very difficult, what mm-hmm. the Ferrans did is the next best thing, and I tell people, go for it. You just amend the governing documents, stripping all the powers of the HOA away. And they don't have the power to fine you. They don't have the power to do anything. They have the power to collect enough money to maintain a one-acre lot, to pay the insurance and to maintain it. That's it. The homeowners themselves got together, went around with a hat in hand, knocked on doors, hired someone to come in and take, you know, shovel the snow away. And they got the neighbors to chuck in, you know, to contribute to the bill. And they went out together. They shoveled the snow. And they built, you know, they built a community instead of a war zone.
Right. Well, and I think one of the hard things is finding a way to cap power on these things. Because inevitably, if it's given anything at all, it, you know, whoever's behind it always tries to make it grow. It's inevitable. It's seek ever greater power over all the homeowners out there. Ever, you know, I've watched my former subdivision. They hired one of the HOA attorneys in town to, you know, they needed a draft or dedicatory instruments to bring them up to current law. Well, that's ridiculous because current law controls what it is. And when you look at what they've done, they've actually added a whole bunch more different kinds of liens, a whole bunch more different kind of charges, many more restrictions. They also eliminated provisions that said, hey, you know, the variances, basically they can't take away a variance once it's granted. Well, the HOA attorney tried doing that when we were in court. Oh, that was this architecture committee, but now we have a new one, and they're not obligated to recognize or to respect the earlier variance, so we're revoking them. It's like, no, people built houses and everything based upon this stuff. You don't get to revoke it. Well, that was actually hard-coded in our restrictions. It said they couldn't revoke it or rescind it after it was granted, and they've tried, you know, to go in and amend these things to eliminate the provisions that had stuff like that in there. So the people behind this are clearly seeking ever greater power. I'm thinking about the Armstrong case out of North Carolina. That was a pretty famous case. It's cited everywhere.
We're going to have to do it another time, Bill, because believe it or not, we are out of time.
Okay.
Thank you so much for joining us. And if an HOA attorney comes towards you wanting to amend your governing documents, show them the door. Show them the door. Kick them in the backside. Or the gun.
Yeah.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.